How do you like Goucher?
Well, I do like it. It's a very pleasant atmosphere there, not to mention the students, because there are 1,000 girls. There's a school for girls. And they riding horses and look very elegant and pretty.
Are you living in Towson?
No, I live in Washington, D.C.
So I'm
commuting twice a week over there to Goucher campus. And I have an apartment there. They gave me an apartment for staying.
On the campus?
On the campus, yes.
Do you commute daily?
No, just for 2 days a week.
So you're there 2 days a week?
2 days a week, yes.
I know the area. I used to work at the CBS television affiliate in Baltimore.
In Baltimore.
WMAR-TV, uh-huh. Which is right. Uh-huh. Well, you know where Towson State College is?
Yes, I know. I haven't been there. But
no, but the station, it's below Goucher,
uh-huh.
On York Road.
Uh-huh.
It's below Goucher.
I see. Uh-huh.
And then the television station that worked
uh-huh.
for was right on the line. It was in Baltimore County, but
uh-huh.
so I know the area pretty well.
It's a nice little city.
Yes. Where do you live in Washington?
In D.C., in Midtown, I would say, on Wyoming Avenue. You know that maybe off Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Three blocks off Connecticut Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. I want to get some background about yourself and talking about the book. First, I want to ask you, you wrote The Island of Crimea in Russian.
Yes.
You've obviously read the English version now. Are you satisfied with the translation?
Very satisfied. That's most important, that the translator caught the tune of the book, of original prose. So he succeeded to catch this, any tints, any shades of original prose.
How do you pronounce the man's name? Michael Henry Haim?
Haim, his name.
Is translation difficult? You said you were satisfied with it, but and he did catch the tone, but obviously there are nuances that can be lost.
Oh, yes, sure, that's inevitable. But I would say that some percentage of any books is missing in any translation, you know. But the first goal of translator to find not exact meaning of the words, but to find some adequate...
some of the subtleties.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
In some of the biographical material that was sent to me earlier, and I think there's some clippings from Time and Newsweek, it said that you were planning at some point to write in English after you had mastered the language. Do you indeed plan to do this?
No, I'm not going to write in English. Maybe I'll start to write some articles in English, but I will never start writing prose in English. It's too late. Mm-hmm. Too late for me, but I cannot rule out that maybe in the future I will be able to play with two languages, you know, to find some, writing about this country, about my own life and about my fellow countrymen life in this country, in our new land, you know. So maybe in the future I will find some way to play between two languages, to use English as a artistic tool for my future books, you know.
What do you do as a writer in residence at Goucher? What are your roles?
I have my own seminar. So I would say this is a seminar on creative writing. I'm talking with students about the very subtle matter of psychology of prose writer, about the first impulses for writing. It's called that approximately like how nothing is turning into something, you know. What are the very first impulses for writing? How the prose writer arrives to decision to start, you know. There is my topic.
So you're getting inside the writer.
Inside.
What the writer is like inside.
Yes. And also, I'm telling them some informative material about the contemporary Russian prose and authors, along with that. Also, I participate in a seminar in Goucher College also, which is called the Awakening Time, the 60s East and West. So I represent East in the seminar, along with three other professors of Goucher College who represent West. We're talking about literature, about songs, about rock music, jazz, and everything, you know.
What was it like for you being a writer in the Soviet Union with a state-controlled press?
Well, you know, I was fortunate to start in the very peculiar period of Soviet history, as well as all my friends. So our generation appeared on stage during the so-called period of thaw. Khrushchev's time, you know, after Stalin's death. And that was a short, very short period of a relatively mild climate in Soviet cultural policy. And that's why we got the chance to express ourselves relatively freely, more or less freely. So, and when this period was running out after Khrushchev's fall, and the step by step, gradually, there the Soviet authorities started to reinstate the Stalinist mood in the society. And so that step by step we found ourselves out of place.
In the United States, it seems relatively simple, at least in theory, to publish a novel. An author writes it and then and sells it, and if somebody wants to publish it, it's published. But how do you do that in the Soviet Union?
Well, it's hard. That on the surface it looks very normal, so you submit your manuscript to publishing house, and you're waiting the decision of the editors and so forth. But everything under very strict control of ideological apparatus of Communist Party, of course. So it's very hard to overcome these restrictions and taboos which exist in Soviet literature. There are numerous taboos which exist in Soviet literature. Some points you're not allowed even touch. For instance, the memory of the dreadful past of Stalinist times, the anti-Semitism in Soviet Union, some drug problems, alcoholism problems, and so on, numerous of that.
Well, I understand that you were extremely popular as a writer in the Soviet Union.
That's
but
right.
Something happened. You began to run afoul of the change in winds?
No, not at all. So that I, along with some my own, along with some my friends of the same generation, we were allowed to touch or at least hint some problems because of our names, you know. We already won the recognition, the popularity with the readers, you know. And that was much harder to for authorities. It was much harder to cope with our names rather than with the names of unknown people, you know. Mm-hmm. We already won our reputation as so-called non-conformist authors during this period of 60s. That's why that was much harder for them to control.
What happened? Did they stop publishing your material?
Well, that's right. The year by year, I found more and more my works under my desk, you know, I would say. So that year by year, I was turning into first to half of Aksionov, you know, then into one-third of Aksionov, so that just one-third of my works were on the surface, and two-thirds of my writing were submerged, were not allowed to publish. That was the basis for my conflict with authorities.
How does a writer make a living in the Soviet Union? Is he paid a salary?
No, not at all. It depends on his publication, you know.
You are paid on the basis of your books?
Yes, that's right.
Do they pay a livable wage?
Not any regular salary at all.
You have to supplement this with other work. I know you were a medical doctor.
No, not at all. I was writing. I couldn't make living with prose, you know. That's why I was looking, always was looking for a movie job. I was writing scripts. That was my main source of support, you know.
I guess you know.
Some writers are looking for translation job, you know. And so, you know, only very prominent, officially endorsed writers can make the good living with their books, you know.
Even in the United States and Britain, it's not always easy for an author to make it economically. As you yourself know, you supplement this work with teaching jobs and things like
but,
that.
But, you know, in Soviet Union, there is one peculiarity. Your honorarium doesn't depend on sales, you know. You will not get more money if your books are selling well. And it depends on the volume of your book and on some rates for your writing, you know. So, that, for instance, they pay a regular fee for some writers and for some prominent officially established authors a little bit higher.
Were you harassed at all by the government when you were living in the Soviet Union?
Excuse me?
Were you harassed?
Well, that was, yes, that was period when I was in 1977 exactly. I was approached by KGB, and I was warned by them not to publish my works abroad, because they were aware it's impossible to publish inside. All publishing houses belong to the state. So they warned me not to publish my novels abroad, otherwise they said we will have to say goodbye to you. So in a year, I joined the bunch of authors who were trying to establish an independent magazine called Metropole. The Metropole, that was notoriously known, so-called Metropole case. So I was considered the ringleader of that, and I was harassed again.
How were you harassed?
Sometimes even physically, you know. There were some unpleasant tricks from them, you know.
Physically harassed?
Yes.
Sometimes. You mean roughed up on the street?
Not on the street, but that was some provocation with my car. They were tailing my car, they blocked my mail, they bugged my telephone, they slashed my tire in the car, and so some nasty tricks of them.
Is this when you decided that you had to leave?
Well, not because of that. I realized that if I stay and if I keep fighting, I will be turned into the political personality, you know. That was not my point, you know. I didn't want to be the political dissident, because I had only one goal, that was writing, you know. That's why I decided to leave the country and asked for passport. They issued a passport, the regular one, as if it's for a regular foreign trip, the trip abroad. And but they cheated me, and in 4 months they deprived me of citizenship. So I found myself without any papers in the United States.
Well, let's go back a moment. You applied for a passport to leave.
Yes.
At that time, did you plan to stay abroad permanently?
Anyway, for some period of time, well, or for several years.
Did you have employment ahead? And how were you going to sustain yourself for this X number of years?
Well, I knew that I will be invited by some universities here and in Europe. So first we came to Europe, to Paris, and we were hesitating where to go. I had some offering from different universities. At last we decided to come here.
Uh-huh. And 4 months later, you lost your citizenship.
I lost my citizenship, yes.
Are you angry at the Soviet Union for this?
Not at all. I'm not angry at my people. I love my country and my people. But I really, I would say, but I'm scornful to the authorities, you know. They are nasty, they are stupid, they have nothing to do with literature, with art. And they are trying to impose yourself in all fields of human activity, and it's so out of date. They, as if they live in not contemporary world. They have little to do with contemporary world. They are absolutely old-fashioned Marxists, you know.
Well, in the island of Crimea, you take a few swings in a funny way. For example, there is one scene that takes place in Paris where your hero, whose name escapes me,
mm-hmm.
Luchnikov,
yes.
Reminds himself to take a few items as gifts back to the Soviet Union.
That's right.
And then you have a whole page of everything from toothpaste to Tampax.
It also shows that they're falling behind the contemporary world. That's a shame.
Is this the thrust of your satire in the island of Crimea, that the Soviet Union has indeed fallen behind the world?
That's true. You know that Soviet Union is a very distorted society, as well as very distorted economy. It develops their space program, for instance, and it looks like highly advanced society, you know. But on the other hand, you cannot develop the color film, the regular color film in the Soviet Union. And you cannot you cannot get access to the any Xerox machines, you know. And as a matter of fact, the Soviet Union, the Soviet society, the socialist society is against modern technology, I would say. The modern technology versus Soviet Union.
Well, the modern technology frees the individual from all constraints. You mentioned the photocopying machines.
Yes, that's
now
right.
You can go, if you had a photocopying machine, you can publish your own articles at home.
That's right. You are absolutely right. You know that modern technology is developing the system of modern communications between people, you know. And so that's why they're extremely... they're scared to death by modern technology, you know. For instance, these tape recorders, just regular tape recorders, they were out of control already during the 60s. That's why the so-called balladers, bards, were able to get access to the listeners, you know. And so-called, and now, take for instance this microchips.
Mm-hmm.
And if in the near future the book itself maybe will be like very small thing, you know, like some cassette or something like that, that's a great danger for totalitarian system.
In your book, The Island of Crimea, the book concludes with an invasion of the island by the Soviet Union after an agreement had already been made for peaceful reunification.
Uh-huh.
Do you see any parallels between this that you picture in your book and, say, the United States invasion of Grenada? Or is this too far-fetched a question?
You know, that's a funny coincidence. I finished this book, The Island of Crimea, a month before Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And that was released by Random House here in this country a month after American invasion of Grenada. It looks very funny.
It's like you planned it.
Yes, that's right. Well, but there is a great difference, of course, between these two invasions, you know. I wouldn't presume that Americans will be there on this little island for more than for 4 years. And on the other hand, the goal of American operation was the restoration of democracy.
As the White House sees democracy.
That's right. That's right.
It's something a little different.
But it's a little bit closer to ideal meaning of democracy than Soviet meaning of democracy, I would say.
Is there any hope that the island of Crimea will ever be read in the Soviet Union?
It's circulating there. Yes, I have the information that it's circulating there. Well, in very small number of copies, of course, but there are some books, some copies of the book in Russian, of course, circulating there. And the people, recently I got a letter from an anonymous reader, you know. It took 4 months for this letter to reach my mailbox. It was sent through India and so on. And this reader, I was very happy to find out that this book is circulating there, and as well as another my major book called The Burn, and people are reading that. And they're multiplying that by some means, by typing. Or, sometimes even by Xerox copy machines. You know?
They can find a government office and sneak in at night to do that.
Bribing the workers.
Well, my last question, Mr. Aksionov. Right now you are a stateless person, I assume. What are you going to do about that?
I was recently approved as permanent resident of this country. And so in 3 years or 4 years, I will be able to get the citizenship of this country.
Is that your intention?
Yes, why not?
Do you ever see the day when you might go back to the Soviet Union?
I cannot rule out that this day will come, but it's hard to imagine this day right now. People always dream of a miracle, you know. So we are dreaming of a miracle.
Mr. Aksionov, you're a very interesting man, and it's fascinating talking to you, and I wish you the best with the book, and I certainly hope that it will be read in the Soviet
Union. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you were...